advocacy and navigating through the COVID-19 pandemic as a person with a disability. Joining me today is Tabitha Burley. Tabitha, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Anthony. Thank you.
Excellent. So, Tabitha, take us to the very beginning in terms of advocacy and how that began for you.
I think it's an innate part of me, actually. My mom's dad was a minister, and I think that gene was passed down to me to advocate and help people wherever possible. So not only do I do it for accessibility, I kind of step in whenever anybody needs a hand, whatever it may be.
And so for you yourself, when did that actually begin, when you started seeing things that you never felt that were right and there were wrongs to you as a human being? How did that kind of affect you, and how did that make you feel in terms of wanting to do right by what were the wrongs?
I don't know if there was any pinpointed time when it started for me. I just, whenever there's a situation where I know it doesn't seem right, then I'm not afraid to, I guess, roll forward and speak up and have the voice heard. Because I think society in general has been taught that, you know, you just kind of sit back and let things happen. And I'm definitely not that way, especially if it's not right.
Right. So you said sit back and let things happen. What are some of the instances? Could you give us some sort of examples that how society has wronged you and that you've actually amplified your voice to make it right?
Yeah, sure. I think, again, society has been taught that, you know, because we look different, if you will, then they assume, because of the way they're taught, that they know us better than we know ourselves, instead of asking us, hey, how do you do this? Or, you know, oh, I'm so sorry for you. That's when I get a lot. And I don't know any different. So to have somebody say, oh, it must be difficult, or I feel so sorry for you, drives me crazy, quite honestly. So I'll just say, like, I don't know any different. So I don't feel sorry for myself. So please don't feel sorry for me, type of thing, right? So it's all about having them not assume they know, and educate them on that it really is okay to be me in this case.
Absolutely. And you as a person, what is your technique when it comes to educating?
As much as possible, I like to show people that even though the way of doing something may be adapted, anything is really possible. It's just where you choose to have your mindset about what others may view as an obstacle. I always go into like problem solving mode, if you will, saying, okay, this is tricky, but how can I navigate it, right? How can I adapt to it and make it work? That's just how I'm wired. That's just how I work.
So essentially the accomplishment of a task rather than the steps it takes to complete it, so to speak.
Yeah, and I mean, I think in my case too, I notice a lot in general, people are afraid to ask for help because, again, it's been taught almost or ingrained into people that if you ask for help, it's viewed as a weakness, which to me is 1,000% wrong.
Absolutely.
Asking for help is not a weakness. Asking for help, probably in the end, even though you might not see it at first, will make you stronger because you probably learned something that you didn't know before you took that on.
Right. And as you just alluded to, asking for help is empowering, so to speak. Asking for help just allows you to accomplish your tasks more efficiently, and that's okay. But it's also finding that fine line to know your own independence and what you can accomplish on your own as well, correct?
That's right. Yeah, For sure. Like I still even find that at 41 and a half, you know, like my mom will step in when I'm like, you know, I know we're trying to be kind, but it's okay. Even though it may look like what I'm trying to do in my way is awkward. Like, I know I can do it and it's not hurting me. Like, let me, as you say, let me be as independent as possible.
What, have you gone out in the community and actually surprised people, so to speak, and by accomplishing something that people didn't think you actually could accomplish?
Yeah, a perfect example of that is real estate. So for those watching, I'm a real estate broker in Ontario, Canada. Specifically, my brokerage is in London, but I service Lambton Shores area, which is on the edge of Lake Huron. So when I did that, for most people, I'd be like, oh, congratulations, Anthony, way to go. They were like, why would you get into real estate when most houses are not accessible, which is true. However, I looked at it that, you know, there's always a way, and there's like lots of teams in real estate where people split up the work and stuff like that. So that was kind of frustrating for me, where it was automatically a negative response, where I was like, no, it's easy to work around. I just need somebody that can actually do the legwork, right? Like the walking for me. So everything else I can do perfectly fine. My brain isn't affected in terms of, you know, doing all the paperwork, talking to the people, building that relationship, doing the negotiations and stuff like that on behalf of the client. So,
and you also offer a different dynamic in terms of, you know, essentially looking toward the future, so to speak, in terms of providing accessibility and inclusionary type, whether it be features or opportunities going forward. Could you speak to that?
Yeah. So I think what you're maybe alluding to, I've been a huge advocate in my area as well. Maybe not quite as big as yourself, but in terms of accessibility and what it means to have accessibility for others in the future. I find, especially in the last few years, in our area, our median age is 56, and even all the houses that we're still building, they're all like, you know, they all have steps and stuff. So I'm trying to slowly switch the mindset of, you know, having a house that is attractive to someone doesn't have to be made attractive with stairs. And then in terms of accessibility, that would make the house, you know, more like living in place. So as people get older, they can still stay where they are, because long-term care is going to become a huge issue in the province. Like within the next few years, they're just not going to have room for the amount of people that need the accommodation. So if we can kind of pivot the way that they think about housing and accessibility and how it can be done from the ground up, literally like when they're building, then I think that will change people's outlook on accessibility that way too.
Absolutely. Tabitha, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
CIOI 101.5, The Hawk.
So you went out drinking and you did the right thing. You left the car at home. Thank you. But did you know that if you drank a lot and stayed up late, you could still have alcohol in your system the next day and could register a fail on a roadside screening device? It can take up to 12 hours or more from the time of your last drink for your BAC to reach zero. And only time, not sleep, coffee, or a shower, sobers you up any faster. A message from Arrive Alive Drive Sober and SmartServe Ontario.
I got a call at work today. They said that my fiancé had been in a car accident. He was hit head-on, and he's still in surgery.
For someone in need, you can be the difference between life and death. Do you really need another reason to donate blood?
Because they aren't sure they'll be able to save him.
You can save a life right now. Call 1-888-2-DONATE to book an appointment today. Canadian Blood Services. It's in you to give.
If you know just 25 people, you likely know someone who carries the gene that causes cystic fibrosis. And when two carriers have a child, there's a 1 in 4 chance that child will have CF, spending life gasping for air, and then dying young. Yes, there's a 1 in 25 chance you're a carrier, but it's an absolute certainty that your support can make a difference. Please visit cysticfibrosis.ca to find out how you can help breathe life into the future.
You're listening to The Hawk, 101.5 FM, broadcasting across Hamilton from the edge of the Niagara Escarpment.
Welcome back to Above and Beyond, Bridging the Gap to Accessibility and Inclusion. And I'm back with Tabitha Burley. We were just talking before the break about accessibility in the housing market and looking toward housing in the sense that you're looking at it from an accessibility standpoint. Tabitha, I was just wondering if you could elaborate on that for us.
Yeah, so what I've seen, I've been in real estate for 5 years coming up June, and what I've noticed, obviously, I already alluded to, is that unfortunately 99% of houses currently that are built, whether they're already existing or being built, they're still not accessibility friendly. So what I would like to ultimately try and do is get with a developer and have them see that they can even have the same blueprints, because I mean, they do their numbers, right? So they want their bottom line to be, they spend as little as possible to still make their money. But what I want them to see is that taking stairs away, making hallways wider, maybe light switches lower to start. If somebody hasn't come in and bought that specifically with specific accessibility needs like I myself would need, they can do the bare minimum and have it in place in the plans that if the kitchen needs to be accessible more or the bathroom needs to be accessible more, that it's in the initial plans that it can either be that way, or they have it in place that there's a way that it can be adapted without having to retrofit and it be really expensive to then turn around in 5 or 10 years potentially and retrofit. Because doing it from the ground up, doing it from when they're actually building versus retrofitting, is a huge cost savings.
And one of the things also I think to remember is the importance of the implementation of technology. It's there for a reason, and I think it's important, especially in like housing development, if we use, whether it be motion sensors, whether it be the implementation of a voice activated home, right? Such features like that may be a little bit, I don't know if simple is the right word, but it's effective in the way as we advance into the future.
Yeah, and I think like you just said, it's already here. So I mean, their first pushback is going to be it's expensive. But I think if they looked at it over like a larger scale or longer term, and if you had a relationship with a company, I don't think it would necessarily have to be that way. Again, I think they go in with a closed mindset or assuming they know, without giving it an opportunity and seeing what, like I've always said, it actually widens who their potential audience is versus right now, it actually makes it smaller. I know that, you know, our population, or if they're looking at people aging in place, is smaller, but it's going to keep getting bigger because, as you said, the baby, like our baby boomer population, is living longer, so it needs to be thought of sooner than later. So I hope to be a pivotal piece in having developers see that. That's my ultimate goal.
Well, and as you said, you know, rather than transitioning into a long-term care facility, they'll right. be able to stay in their home for longer periods of time. Yes. So I think that's vital. Just switching topics, Tabitha, you know, as we navigate the pandemic as people with disabilities ourselves, how has that been for you? What was it like at the beginning to where it's now? We're essentially a year into this. And how has it been for you?
Well, it's interesting because the pre-pandemic, people always thought in the winter specifically, I swear they thought I hibernated. Because in the spring, they'd say, oh, Tabitha, nice to see you out again. So it's interesting, during the pandemic, the whole year long, as you say, we're a year in, I've never got asked that once. So for me, it's actually provided a huge opportunity. And what I mean by that is, again, I've always seen the potential for the online world to be a huge tool for people in our scenario, where transportation or accessibility of buildings, things like that, may be a roadblock. The pandemic has opened eyes literally overnight to the potential of what online can bring to people, which may not have had the opportunity prior to the pandemic. So for me, it's opened up huge amounts of opportunity, not only in accessibility, but just connecting with people business-wise and in entrepreneurship, like, that I would never have connected with otherwise. So where people think it's real, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's affected stuff in not such good ways too, but for me personally, it's been more than okay.
So opportunities based.
Yes.
It's opened up 100%. Opportunities for you, for your entrepreneurial ventures and so on. And I think it's also bridged the gap, so to speak. So because the vast majority is used to working in a face-to-face world, mm-hmm. and now we see the value of technology and
right.
how we can still maintain, whether it be our business, whether it be our organization and so on, we can still maintain it, albeit differently, but we do miss the face-to-face interaction.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure. I definitely miss people and going places and being like actually physically part of society like everybody else. But I mean, when we didn't have an option, it still provided things to run and function and everything like that. So it actually, at first it was frustrating for me, because I know in our accessibility committee here, we actually advocated for us to have the option to have more online meetings and such. And it was always no, because that'll be too expensive to implement. But then when our council needed it, for example, to still have their meetings and stuff, of course, now it's fully implemented. So it's just interesting where obviously there's power in numbers, right?
Absolutely. And you just you read my mind, basically. I was going to allude to the fact that, you know, the able-bodied community is now seeing the value of technology and having to adapt, so to speak, whereas it's something that the disability community already had awareness of and knowledge of. So we're essentially kind of coming together as one, where we're all people, and essentially the disability doesn't necessarily matter, so to speak.
Not at all. No, not at all. And I think, again, back to where we kind of started the conversation, that's an assumption, right? So because we look different or may do things differently, that's an assumption that, you know, the disability to able-bodied, if you will, is an impediment. And to us, it's not an impediment. We're doing everything we can to be heard and seen more. So again, I think the pandemic has done that for us in a huge way.
Yeah. And as you just said, you know, I think if anything, the pandemic has allowed for opportunities for change and the ability for people with disabilities to amplify their voices to bridge that gap to accessibility and inclusion, and to allow the able-bodied community to see the vision that we see from our perspective and
yeah,
going further.
Yeah.
And seeing that from our perspective, they become knowledgeable kind of firsthand through experiences that we know, that we've seen, that we've been privy to. What have you seen that's been the biggest change pandemic-wise?
In terms of what specifically?
In terms of what the world has kind of evolved into from the perspective of something as a person with a disability that's already known?
So really, like, there's really no difference. So what? I sit in a chair and I roll. Everybody's needs through the pandemic has become the same. So everybody's way of connecting through the pandemic, if it hasn't been allowed to be in even a small group, has been this way right here, right? Right. So again, and potentially there's scenarios where if they don't know us prior to us being on screen like this, would you necessarily know I'm sitting in a chair? No, you can't see my chair at all, nor can I see yours, right? Why does it matter?
Exactly. And that's exactly the vision that we're trying to get to in our communities, that we're all people first, and disability or certain demographics doesn't matter. I know in Hamilton, the percentage of persons with disabilities is greater than the provincial and national averages. And we're essentially trying to level the playing field. But on that note, Tabitha, we're going to take our final break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to CIOI The Hawk, 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
In Ontario?
It's the law.
If you're under the age of 22 and you're driving,
you can't have any alcohol to drink.
Zero.
That's zero.
Nada. None.
Nothing.
Zilch.
Not a drop.
That means
no beer.
No wine.
No shots.
No coolers.
Not even a sip.
No alcohol.
End of story.
If you're under the age of 22 and you're driving,
forget the booze.
Zero.
Nothing.
Nada.
Zip.
Zero tolerance for alcohol and drivers under the age of 22. Let's keep our roads safe.
A message for all young drivers in Ontario from Mad Canada.
Here's an interesting statistic. Out of every 1,000 sexual assaults in Canada, 3 lead to a conviction. That means you're more likely to get into trouble for making an illegal left-hand turn, or parking in the wrong place, or walking your dog without a leash, or not shoveling your sidewalk, or jaywalking. We don't think that's okay. If you agree, join the conversation at #NotOkay. A message from YWCA Canada.
Mohawk College is launching its new Center for Entrepreneurship. The center will be hosting exciting events for students, alumni, and the community. The college's new center is committed to growing the entrepreneurial spirit and mindset, both in the classroom and out in the community. Mohawk has a long line of successful alumni entrepreneurs. If you're interested in what Mohawk's new Center for Entrepreneurship has to offer, check them out on YouTube. You can follow them on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Mohawk Surge.
Welcome back. And Tabitha, before the break, we were just talking about how our skills are out there as people with disabilities during the pandemic, and we're able to show what our abilities are more prevalent because it's just something that has allowed the gap to be bridged, so to speak, during this pandemic. Yep. Could you speak to that a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. So I joined, I guess, a couple of conferences, the International Cerebral Palsy Conference, which is the challenge that I have. And I noticed that it was a common thread that people had a talent or an ability or a skill. They just didn't know how to take it to the next step for the general public or people to be able to see that. And so I'm going to be starting, well, I have a website actually. It's rollingwithme.com, which is going to allow people to say what their skill is and where they need help. And then if they don't know how to get it from in their head, I guess, to out in whatever source they want to have it, I will assist with that. And then ultimately, I also would like to, or I'm going to be starting a podcast calling Rolling with Tabitha, and interviewing people with talents and skills, and so that they can have their voice heard and more seen by the public. So I think that's great that the pandemic has allowed us to see how big that need is. Like, I already knew it was there. I just didn't know how common and how large it was. So I'm really excited about that as well.
Now, post-pandemic, when everything is all cleared, what would you like to see normal? What would you like to see happen in communities all across Ontario, Canada, the world?
Well, I've already thought about this, actually. So it makes me a little nervous that whatever the new normal is going to look like, I hope, since we've been in this a year, that they see the value of having the online option, and that even if there is like physical venue events again, that they always now have the option to have an online feature, so that when it is more normal, we don't lose this ability that we've been now given because everybody needed it again if our numbers go back to a smaller scope, if that makes sense. So that's my hope, that it doesn't go anywhere, right? That the online venue for us doesn't go anywhere.
And it creates more opportunities for more people with disabilities to be more prevalent in our communities across the world. I mean, people with disabilities across the world represent 1.3 billion people. So in order to maintain that level of, and I don't know if relevance is the right word, but in the to maintain that level of opportunity, we need to be more vocal. We need to be more open-minded in the way that we progress going forward, and allow people with disabilities and our talents and our focus and our skills to be visible, whether it's in the sense that people with disabilities, you know, it may look unorthodox to the uneducated eye. We need to be able to visualize and express our normal to the community, so the gap is bridged, so to speak.
Right, and like you've always said, it's about education. So now this has given us the tool to educate. So while we still have it, and like I say, hopefully it doesn't go away, but while we still have it, let's educate her as hard as we can.
Absolutely. And, you know, and one of the things quickly I wanted to touch on briefly was that you actually ran for council.
I did.
A few years ago. Just can you talk to us about that briefly?
So in 2014 and 2018, both I ran for, we have wards here. So I ran for my ward, and the first time I lost my seat by 19 votes, second time by 73 votes. So, again, it was just a way for me. I've always liked to help people, whether it's through accessibility or other ways. So I wanted to be a voice for our community and try to make the positive difference that we need to see in some ways that we're still behind, in my opinion. So unfortunately, that didn't work out. So when I didn't get the seat twice, that's when in 2015 I registered for the real estate, and then in 2018 I decided to do it again. Whether I'll run it again in 2022, I'm not exactly sure yet, but we will see. I'm always there to serve. It makes me happy to make a small difference for the greater good. It always makes me happy.
And Tabitha, I've known you for a few years now, and I've just been enlightened and empowered by our conversations on a regular basis. And we're going to close today's show by our quote. And the quote comes from Tabitha today. She says that anything is possible when you turn impossible to impossible. I'm Anthony Frazina. See you next time. United, always trying to face the day. We're together and now we're here to stay.
You're listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.